This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. The celebrated Marilyn Nelson is with us with a new book, a fascinating book. Pemba, what's this book about? Tell us, Marilyn, a little bit about this beautiful book.
Thank you, Grace. Thanks for the invitation also. Yes, this is a book that began with a note from a friend of mine whose father had found a letter behind a stone, a brick in a colonial house in Connecticut. And he gave me a copy of this letter, which is dated May 22nd, 1795. I don't know whether you want me to read the letter or, but this is where Pemba started.
You know, anything that sparks the writer's imagination, this is the inception of the book. Of course we want to hear it. This letter was actually found, right?
Yes, it was actually found.
And this started the whole book.
And this is the letter. I am writing in a dreadful fear that someone may see this. As soon as I have hidden this, it may be will pass. This is a terrible thing to feel, and I hope no one may ever feel it. As I turned around a little while ago, I thought I saw the old man's eyes staring at me out of the dark. It was terrible to hear the old man scream as I knocked him down the stairs. To me, it seems to me that I still hear him. Will he always haunt me? If anybody ever finds this, which I hope they will never will, they know how terrible I feel. And it's signed John something or other. The last name is illegible.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That has to go to the Library of Congress. You know, that is a letter, an actual letter about a man who killed somebody, and it's a letter of confession, and it actually summarizes the book. So that, from that moment, you were intrigued, and you needed to get to the... So what happens next to the writer's mind?
I discussed it with a friend, and we agreed to collaborate on telling the story.
Wow. And that woman is Tanya Hegeman.
Tanya Cherie Hegeman, yes. She wrote about 3/4 of the text in prose and in some new forms of poetry. I can't remember the names of the forms she used. And I wrote a smaller part. It's a ghost story. And I wrote the voice of the ghost in the sonnets.
Yeah, well, Scholastic Books put it out, and they had faith in it. And I think it needs to be everywhere because it is history. It is a horror story. It is beautifully written. And just, can you summarize just in a couple of sentences what happens? Because we're going to hear from this book.
Yes,
so just tell us in a couple
from the ghost story.
Yeah.
We invented a house in which this took place. And in every room of the house, a young girl named Pemba, a young African-American girl whose family has just moved from Brooklyn, I think, to this small town, Colchester, Connecticut. Every time she goes into a room of the house, she feels a chill and sees something she can't explain.
Mm.
It happens over the course of time. The story unfolds for her in a series of visual scenes. And the scenes were my part of the book. And Tanya wrote the part of the book that belongs to Pemba.
She wrote the fiction. What I like about it is that it's a story within a story, because not only do we have this fictive idea, then we have we go back to the past, which is embedded in the story. But not only that, there's a character, Abraham, in the story who actually exists in real life.
Is it an African-American man? I guess he must have been in his 60s then. And he was fascinated by local history. And so every time we ran into him, mostly in the local diner, where he was the cleanup person sweeping the floor, every time we ran into him, he'd tell us something, another fascinating story about the history of Colchester, Connecticut. We gave him a lot of money and he took off for Mexico.
But one thing I want to say is that Black history was unknown really in Connecticut, because one of your characters doesn't know a thing about it. And then so much is uncovered. So let's hear a little bit from Pemba's song, and then we can refer to that a bit. This is Marilyn Nelson, who is well-known. She has authored or translated more than 20 poetry books for adults and children. She served as a chancellor of the Academy of American Poets. She was the poet laureate of the state of Connecticut. And here's Marilyn Nelson.
Thank you, Grace. I haven't timed... these are sonnets. I don't know how long it takes to read a sonnet. Can you stop me? I think maybe three.
We want it all.
Thank you. But I wanted to do it in small increments. So, I'll read three and see how long it takes to read three.
This is this ghost, Phyllis.
This is the ghost, Phyllis. And again, This starts with the letter, the actual letter, 1795. So you have to keep that date in mind. The first one is called Attic Window. I was invisible when I slipped off upstairs on the attic ladder. Nobody could find me up there where I used to seek you, friend. I'd steal a few minutes away from my chores and tiptoe back down when Miss Phoebe called. Dear friend, you first came after my mummy died, birthing my brother, the baby that died. If it wasn't for old Master Hart, I would have been sold as not worth the bother. Now, Master Hart is gone. I'm sitting on the splintery floor, hands in my lap, asking you, friend, to help me understand how I live on in the home of this wicked man, knowing what I know. I don't really hope for an answer, but it's good to be alone. All of these Phyllis poems are addressed to her imaginary friend. Okay. That was the first one. The second one is called Master Bedchamber. Old Mistress Hart and Miss Phoebe cared for me when I was a young child, and Miss Phoebe could smile. But her engagements seemed destined to fail. One fiancé married another girl. One went to sea. Side by side in her chamber, Miss Phoebe and I wrote with our fingertips on the counterpane and ran across the hall when Mistress cried out in pain from the front bedchamber where she was preparing to die. Minutes ago, after crooning and cooling her brow, when she'd sunk again into a fitful sleep, I had risen to leave when her mirror beckoned to me.
Mm.
I gazed and gazed into that mystery. Mistress Heart just gave out a sigh so deep, I know. Dear friend, what will become of me now?
Shall I read this? This is beautiful. Let's talk about this, first of all, because it is really setting the whole tone. This young girl is protected by one man who is murdered, and therefore she's left to her own devices. The mistress who is kind to her has just died, and she is left alone, not knowing what's going to happen to her. And it is really so, she's become so sweet. We really love this character, and she's the face in the mirror of Pemba. Pemba looks into the mirror and sees Phyllis. And that's where Pemba starts feeling she's hallucinating and having a nervous breakdown. So it is really it's a detective story. It's a mystery story. But the lyricism will get you every time. Marilyn Nelson, the beautiful sonnets that you write are what make this book. And you know it.
Thank you, Grace. Thank you.
They punctuate this book with elegance. So it is a story then that Pemba finds out about Black history through Abraham, who believes her finally. You know, what if you see ghosts, Marilyn, and nobody will believe you? That's her problem, right? And she is befriended by Abraham in the library, who first doesn't, and then he does. And then we have the great journey toward reality.
I was just staying with the story and trying to explain what it was that Phyllis had seen and what the dynamics were in the household she had to live in because she was enslaved. And also to offer some information about slavery in the North. Most people think of slavery as a Southern phenomenon, but slavery existed all the way, it was all over.
And there was a colored school for girls, right, in Connecticut?
There is, yes, there was a colored school for girls in, where was it? Putnam, Connecticut, I think, started by Prudence Crandall.
Well, what I liked about this was Pemba comes from Brooklyn. She's got the street friends and all of the things she loves, the music and her best friends. And here she's in a rural, kind of different place from Brooklyn. And her mom's a teacher and has taken a job there. So Pemba's, first of all, we get her as isolated and already feeling alienated. And then what does she see but a ghost in the house? And then her mother thinks she needs to see a psychiatrist, of course. We have that psychological action. We have the storyline between Abraham, who befriends Pemba. Then we have the storyline between Pemba and the ghost, Phyllis. That, and a lot is learned. What do you think is learned about history, Marilyn, from all that? What do we learn that we didn't know before? About Connecticut, for one thing.
Well, we know that Connecticut was a slave-owning state. We know that this was not a plantation economy, so people who were enslaved were isolated from each other. There were this girl, Phyllis, lives in a house where she's the only Black person she ever sees, unless she goes someplace else for marketing day. So it was an experience of profound isolation. It was an experience that I don't think most Americans think of when they think of chattel slavery. During the 5 years, I think it was, when I was poet laureate of Connecticut, I spent most of that time writing some of Connecticut's Black history, because we know about Connecticut history. We know the high points, we know the big points, but we don't know the histories of individuals who were enslaved. So I think I, during that period, published maybe 3 or 4 books whose mission was to inform people about slavery in Connecticut.
And I want them to know that you have won many awards and your poems have been widely anthologized. You have had many creative writing fellowships, the 1990 Connecticut Arts Award, a Fulbright Fellowship, which took you to France, Guggenheim, the Ruth Lilly Award, the Robert Frost Medal, and the Wallace Stevens Award. It doesn't get much better than that. And so this is a person.
MacArthur is better.
What is
it
better?
It does get better than MacArthur. MacArthur people, voila. No.
Yes, yeah, Maryland. Let's burn a candle for that one.
Please, please.
Wouldn't that be the right thing for you at this time?
That would be the icing.
And you need that because your work has to go on. I mean, the work has to go on, and we need a little fuel for that work. Okay, I'm on it. Well,
good, thank you.
This says, just to backtrack, Pemba comes from Brooklyn, comes to a house. The electrician comes in to install some wires, and the fireplace crumbles. And that's how some evidence is found, who really killed the man who would have protected Phyllis, the slave. And it's a book, a small book, but many layered. Let's hear some more of your writing, Marilyn Nelson. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavallari.
I'm going to skip one. So this is number 4. It's called Parlor. Again,
Phyllis' voice. This is Phyllis' voice.
This is still Phyllis. Okay. Yeah. I'm not allowed to sit on the settee, but I am allowed to pull my ladder back chair from the kitchen corner to the parlor fire for freezing evenings with the family. Sometimes I listen when mistress reads to the boys. I like the story of Moses and the Promised Land. But mostly my hands work while I seek you, friend. I'm brought back by a scuffle's sudden noise, or by Jared and Ezra being trundled off to sleep, or by quarreling voices, or Miss Phoebe's sniveling tears. Into the basket of stockings I still must darn go my mending or knitting, my needles and thread or yarn, and I curtsy, excuse myself, return my chair, and climb upstairs. Now I heard a slap.
Wow. Did you hear that? Those rhymes, chair, stair. This is a poet. The poetry is what elevates the book, even though it's a great fiction story. That is just one more deep level to get the heart of the people. You can't tell about hearts. You can only show it in poetry. And the fact that you attribute poetry to both Phyllis the slave and Pemba, who sees the slave in her apparitions, is a nice unity. So Pemba writes poetry in her journal. Phyllis writes it as a source of maybe escape or hope. Mm-hmm. Very, very riveting. And I would like you to once again read the letter that is the authentic letter found, which sparked the idea for this book, written in the 1700s by the man who killed the helper in the book that would have protected Phyllis. So this is the master of the house, who is the murderer, and makes a confession note. And this is the actual letter.
Yes. I am writing in a dreadful, it's all misspelled, and you have to imagine the spelling. I am writing in a dreadful fear that someone may see this. As soon as I have hidden this, it may be will pass. This a terrible thing to feel, and I hope no one may ever feel it. As I turned around a little while ago, I thought I saw the old man's eyes staring at me out of the dark. It was terrible to hear the old man scream as I knocked him down. It seems to me that I still hear him. Will he always haunt me? If anybody ever finds this, which I hope they never will, they know how terrible I feel.
So this is the letter that sparked the book, an actual letter from the 1700s that was found in the original handwriting. And we will now have a final sonnet from Pemba's poem. And this will be in Phyllis or Pemba's voice. Which one?
These are all in the voice of Phyllis.
Although I must say the journal is quite lyrical as well. Pemba's journal. I think I love Pemba's journal as well, writing. But I do want to hear this.
Okay, the journal, Pemba's journal was, I only wrote the sonnets. I wrote something like 10 Petrarchan sonnets, for 9 sonnets for this.
So we'll have a closing sonnet from Marilyn.
May I read, it's 3 sonnets. Together, do you have time for that?
Yes, we would love that.
So this is a miniature crown of sonnets.
Tell us what a crown.
It tells a large part of the story.
But wait a minute, a crown is very special. We have to tell people that the last line of the sonnet is the first line of the next sonnet.
Right. And then the last sonnet ends with the first line of the first sonnet.
Marvelous.
This is a miniature crown. It's only 3. Okay, it's called Corner Closet. And you'll recognize this is the drama of the found note. Okay, 1. I feel as though I have faded from chestnut brown to a sickly yellowish pallor, almost white. All of a sudden, practically overnight. Sometimes the room seems to go upside down. Sometimes I must sit for a moment to catch my breath. Sometimes I fairly weep with a headache. Perhaps there's some medicine I could take, but I think Master John hopes for my death. No doctor has come. This afternoon, I fell to my knees in here with an armload of sheets. This is in the corner closet. As I revived, I heard a furtive sound and saw Mr. John at the fireplace looking around, removing a brick, hiding a folded note, replacing the brick, and tiptoeing into the hall. Replacing the brick and tiptoeing into the hall, he quietly closed the door. I am alone. What can I do? How can I make a plan, a way to live on? I have grown so ill. I feel the nearing of my journey's end. Help me point out that murderer, Master John, so when he dies, his infamy may live on. That's all I ask of you and life, dear friend. Except for the Holy Bible, Jesus, and Lord, I cannot read. Someone must find that note. Yet But for dark people I saw on market days, illiterate as I, who would believe a slave? Shall I die with huge truth throttled in my throat because I can only read 5 words? Because I can read only 5 paltry words, I must take Master John's cruel secret to the grave with me. Please, friend, if there's time in eternity for justice, this house is a place to start, for here was a great wrong done. I opened the door. My eyes met Master John's. Stifling a scream, I curtsied, eyes lowered.
Phyllis, you seem peaked, child. Later I'll bring you some more of that tonic.
His mouth smiled, his eyes frowned. Yes, sir, I mumbled and pulled myself upstairs to my airless room. I fell on my narrow bed and lay weeping. Oh, friend, I shall soon be dead, cursed with a life in which nobody cares if I live or if I fade from chestnut brown.
The voice of Marilyn Nelson, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan Family, the Sinipid Fund, Friends of the Program, Natalie Canivore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.